This program contains coarse language and violent content. It is for mature audiences only, rated LVAC for language, violence, and adult content. Parental discretion is advised. Hey, welcome to this episode of Light 'Em Up. We are trying something new for this particular episode. We are live and in front of a studio audience of community members. Say hello, everyone. Say hello. Hey, welcome to this episode of Light 'Em Up. Like we said, we take a deep dive on the criminal justice system, crime scene investigation, and leadership. We enlighten, educate, and empower others with the truth. Like it or not, the truth disturbs, the truth divides, but ultimately, the truth delivers. Hey, I'm your host, Phil Rizzo. I'm the principal owner of Rizzo's Protective Group. We are a high-risk security consulting firm headquartered out of Akron, Ohio, and with offices in the Bronx, New York, and Cerro Alto, the Dominican Republic. Hey, as we put the ball on the tee to line things up for kickoff, we speak life, health, and prosperity over each and every one of you, and we want to thank you for joining us. Tonight, on this explosive episode of Light 'Em Up, gun down in a hail of bullets. Some accounts say as many as 90 rounds were fired by 8 officers. We'll examine a case that has the entire city of Akron, Ohio, on the brink of exploding, and the nation again asking why another unarmed black man has been gunned down by police, and will this ever end? As authorities continue their investigation into the deadly Akron police shooting of Jaylen Walker, the Summit County Medical Examiner announced new details regarding the autopsy report early Friday morning, July 15th. Dr. Lisa Kohler outlined the injuries to Walker's body, which included 46 entrance wounds and 15 exit wounds as follows. 17 gunshot wounds injured the pelvis and upper legs, causing internal injury to the right iliac artery, which is a major artery going to the leg, as well as the bladder, and fractures to the pelvis and both upper leg bones, or femurs. 15 gunshot wounds injured the torso and caused internal injury to his heart, lungs, liver, spleen, left kidney, intestines, and multiple ribs. One bullet struck the face and fractured the jaw. 8 gunshot wounds injured the arms and right hand. 5 gunshot wounds injured the knees, right lower leg, and right foot. Dr. Kohler noted that some of the wounds are on the extremities. She goes on to say, I can't say for certain whether wounds pass through an arm and then into the body or not, she said. There is that possibility. I can't say anything different. Then we've got 46 entrance/graze wounds. Dr. Kohler also said the toxicology screening was negative for drugs and alcohol. Jaylen Walker's death was due to blood loss from his internal injuries, Dr. Kohler said. The cause of death ruling was multiple gunshot wounds. The manner of death was ruled homicide, shot by others. She goes on to say, our ruling of homicide is a medical ruling, meaning death at the hands of another. It is not, and I repeat, it is not a legal conclusion. The truth is the burden and duty of leadership. For our listeners that have now expanded into 94 countries, we'll investigate the issue of excessive force and drill deep to see if the civil rights of Jaylen Walker were violated under the color of authority by members of the Akron Police Department. The facts will show, as was the case with multiple officers in the Derek Chauvin-George Floyd encounter in Minneapolis, Minnesota, after being shot by 8 officers, Jaylen Walker was handcuffed before any officer tried to administer any life-saving aid to him. We'll examine the culture of the Akron Police Department under its new top cop, Chief Steve Milet. In what could easily be described as a very rocky start, only 10 months on the job, already the department he leads has had 3 officer-involved killings since December of 2021, and will review the timeline of trouble for the APD, not only in this, but in upcoming episodes as well. We'll explore the APD's vehicle pursuit policy. Did officers of the Akron Police Department violate their own pursuit policy when 10 cars in a caravan pursued Mr. Walker down Route 8 southbound? All this and much, much more on this incendiary edition of Light 'Em Up. On January 20th of this year, we had previously reported in Season 3, Episode 2, entitled Comply or Die, Driving While Black, racially motivated pretextual traffic stops, initial contact with the police that turns deadly. The fact remains that relative to the population, black drivers were overrepresented among those killed when stopped by the police for what amounts to pretextual traffic stops. For what started as a minor traffic and equipment violation, again, ends in the death of a person of color. What was it for this time? A $7.99 license plate light bulb that's supposed to illuminate the rear plate on the vehicle? A failure to signal while making a turn? A burned out taillight. This fact pattern is nothing new. From Sandra Bland's initial traffic stop in Texas to Walter Scott's in South Carolina and Philando Castile's in Minnesota, just to name a few. Our intense focus is on the June 27th killing of Jaylen Walker, an unarmed 25-year-old black man by the Akron Police Department. This episode cuts like a double-edged sword. It hits home for us because it happened here, in our hometown. At the start of every episode, as was the case with this episode, sponsored and underwritten by Rizzo's Protective Group, we tell you that we are a high-risk security consulting firm headquartered out of Akron, Ohio. So this topic is very difficult for us here at Light 'Em Up. We've heard the State Highway Patrol helicopters overhead at night, keeping a watchful eye on the protesters. We know the businesses and buildings that have had their windows smashed in the downtown area. This is home for us. This shooting took place in a part of town that we know very well and have traveled past and to without giving it a second thought. This town is our town, and it all unfolded just 5 miles from where I'm sitting as I speak to you right now. This tragic event has received national and international news coverage. The United Nations has sent investigators here to Akron to aid in the investigation. This incident, it is safe to say, has to have been the highest profile and the most critical incident in the entire history of the city of Akron and the Akron Police Department. Many of you will be aware of some of its details, but no one is aware of all of the details. Bear with us while we set the scene for what promises to be an intense field and troubling discussion about a highly charged topic as we piece together the fact pattern as our team of investigators have uncovered it. This will be the first episode in a series of upcoming episodes covering this case. There has been a tremendous amount of information to cover and unpack in this case. Things are moving very, very rapidly. It's really difficult to know where to start. So let's fall back on our investigative journalistic foundation and reporting experience. Let's start at the beginning. Under a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request, Light 'Em Up received and reviewed the Akron Police Department's critical incident video presentation of case number 22-078920. Here's the case background and fact pattern as we've been able to decipher it. On Monday, June 27th at 12:31 a.m., an officer of the Akron Police Department attempted to initiate a vehicle stop on a silver Buick on Thayer Street, which connects with East Talmadge Avenue, also referred to as State Route 261. We'd come to learn that the reason for the stop was for a traffic violation as well as an equipment violation. Coupled with what the police report that Light 'Em Up obtained for this special episode stated, failure to comply with order of signal of police officer, elude or flee. In other words, the police officer lit him up and Jaylen Walker did not stop. The unofficial crime report released to the public adds very little to our knowledge of the facts in play. I want to read the report to you in its entirety. And I can assure you that you can safely hold your breath while I read it. It's 2 sentences in length. Here's the contents of the report. It reads, suspect fled officers during a traffic stop and led officers on a vehicle pursuit. Deadly force was used to apprehend the suspect. That's the report in its totality. So he failed to stop for the police. What would become a 10-car vehicle pursuit was begun at the Route 8 southbound on-ramp at East Talmadge Avenue. Taken verbatim from the narrative of the Akron Police Department's critical incident video presentation, which was shown at the City of Akron's initial press conference on Sunday, June 28th, at which Light 'Em Up was present. The police's narrative goes like this. Approximately 40 seconds after the vehicle failed to stop, a sound consistent with a gunshot can be heard on the body-worn camera. The lead officer in the pursuit can be heard transmitting to the dispatcher, "That vehicle just had a shot come out of its door." That's what he said. "That vehicle just had a shot come out of its door." Officers say this changed the scene from a standard traffic stop to a public safety issue. You can view the video for yourself. It now has been released and it's on YouTube. Trust me when I tell you that it is barely visible in the video presentation for what amounts to perhaps to be a micro nanosecond in duration. What the police allege is a flash of light erupts on the driver's side of the door of the vehicle driven by Mr. Walker. This poor quality video was captured from the Ohio Department of Transportation, or ODOT, video cameras that line the highway on Route 8. The Akron Police Department, in their presentation, utilized still photos to help bolster their claims. The suspect exited from the passenger side door of the vehicle while it was still slowly rolling and coming to a stop. By then, it was at the Bridgestone Center for Research and Technology, 1659 South Main Street at Wilbeth Road. The chief of police at the city's press conference, where the body cam video was released, made a special effort to mention the fact that the suspect was wearing a ski mask as he began to flee on foot. Trust me, we have plenty that we can report on later about the reason for the traffic stop, the chase, and the whole matter of the Akron Police Department's track record with transparency and culture. But let's pump the brakes for a brief moment to address and review the raw video footage of what happened once Jalen Walker stopped his car.
602 on West on Wilbeth Firestone, can I get in?
Still westbound on Wilbeth. We're passing Evergreen. We're heading towards Maine. Looks like we have some units up ahead at the intersection of Maine. He's slowing down here, slowing down. Stop. Is it a fucking head? Is it a fucking head? Don't you fucking move the car! Don't fucking move! Show me your fucking hands!
Know this fact well. The Akron Police Department doesn't have dash cameras in any car in its entire fleet of police vehicles. Any procedural, policy, or process improvements should start there. In all honesty, the Akron City Council should have shame on themselves that they've never appropriated money for that. Nevertheless, the video shows that Walker opens the driver's side door and sees police approaching. The body camera footage from the passenger side of the vehicle showed Walker leaped out of the passenger side and was in fact wearing a ski mask. In the video, you can see Walker's initial steps out of the vehicle. He stumbled, and he struggled to regain his balance. In doing so, he continued to run. Multiple officers already have guns drawn. You can see at least two officers with bright yellow tasers drawn instead. Remember this fact. Remember it well. We'll circle back to it later on in the broadcast. Jalen continues to run into an empty parking lot. He runs for about 6 more seconds before turning, which APD's police chief said led officers to fire. the video can be paused to see where Walker's shoulders are not fully squared facing the officers. He pivots, and then he's momentarily facing officers. At that point, his arms are by his side. His hands are not visible. That's when officers unload, and Jalen Walker falls to the ground, and they continue and continue and continue to fire. Heavy gunfire in rapid succession ensues. When Walker falls, he was nearly surrounded by officers. Shots were coming at him from several sides. Whether as a defensive strategy or intentionally, or as a sheer result of the deadly impact of the heavy gunfire, Jalen continued to move. He rolled from his back to his stomach and then on his back again. The video is gruesome and hard to watch. One body camera angle from an officer who's firing shots shows another officer waving his hands and screaming, "Cease fire! Cease fire! Cease fire!" at least three times. Again, Jalen is on the ground at that point, but his arms were still moving. Shots continue for 4 seconds after this officer tries to stop them. When they do stop firing, that's where Akron police stop their body-worn cameras. Walker is then laying in the parking lot of the Bridgestone building. His body was handcuffed. Now you may be thinking, now what happens next in this case? The Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation has taken over the inquiry, with Attorney General Dave Yost pledging his office would talk to anyone who knows anything. The State of Ohio Attorney General's office will only be looking at the shooting from the standpoint of whether sufficient evidence exists to establish beyond a reasonable doubt that a violation of the criminal laws of the State of Ohio occurred by law enforcement involved in the shooting of Jalen Walker. Much has been said about the Akron Police Department trying to dehumanize Jalen Walker, making him appear to be a masked monster with a gun. As family attorney Bobby DiCello put it at the July 3rd press conference, just who was Jalen Walker? At the time of his death, at the hands of the Akron Police Department, Jalen Walker was 25 years old, 74 inches in height, which is 6 foot 1 inch tall. He weighed 160 pounds. He was tall and slender. Race, black. Sex, male. Eye color, brown. Hair color, black. Those were the details listed on the medical examiner's autopsy report. But Jalen Walker was much, much more than that. Walker's family said they want the community to know just who Jalen was. He wasn't some street thug. He had no criminal record. He never caused trouble. His family described him as a good man, a loving family member who aspired to start his own delivery service business. He worked at an Amazon fulfillment center and also as a delivery driver for DoorDash. He had been a standout wrestler at Buchtel High School. But recently, times had taken a cruel twist for Jalen Walker. His fiancée, Jamisha Beasley, was tragically killed in May on a highway outside Cincinnati, Ohio, after being struck by a hit-skip driver following a car crash. To date, the driver that killed his fiance has never been located nor charged in the incident. Let's continue to investigate. Some of the tough questions that this case raises would be, why can't the police see the humanity in their suspects? Law enforcement's job is to arrest those who violate the law and bring that individual or individuals to court to answer before a judge or magistrate to the charges with which the prosecutor filed against them. The police can't be an extrajudicial death squad, not in a free and fair democratic society. Why chase Jalen Walker to begin with? The Akron Police Department's pursuit policy states that initiating a pursuit must be based on the pursuing officer's reasonable belief that the immediate danger to the officer and to the public created by the pursuit is less than the immediate or potential danger to the public should the suspect remain at large. Factors officers shall consider include, but are not limited to, A. the nature and seriousness of the original offense, B. whether the identity of the driver is known, C. any other condition or situation that would create an unreasonable risk. Now here's the facts. The police had Walker's information from clearly running his license plate. They could have sent a cruiser directly to his home address and waited for him to arrive and added the charge of eluding. He'd still be alive today, and the city wouldn't have had to face any of this. Why were so many police vehicles involved in the chase? Why 10 vehicles? The question would be, had the Akron Police Department learned nothing at all from the 137 shots fired that killed Timothy Russell and Melissa Williams in their 22-minute pursuit in late November of 2012 with the Cleveland Division of Policing? Marco Somerville, the city's deputy mayor for intergovernmental affairs and senior advisor to Mayor Dan Horrigan, expressed something that was puzzling in the city's press conference on July 12th. He said, "The policy of the Akron Police Department is that if there is a minor traffic offense, that they will, after 3 minutes, they will stop pursuing anybody." Well, let me tell you, that didn't happen in this case. And quickly after that, the chief of police weighed in, saying that the Akron Police Department has had a history of canceling a pursuit 45% of the time. Also, that didn't happen in this case. The APD pursuit policy states, unless circumstances dictate otherwise, a pursuit shall consist of no more than 2 police vehicles, a primary and a secondary unit. Subsection A says, caravanning and trailing is prohibited. However, officers should monitor the progress of the pursuit and be prepared to assist if needed or directed by a supervisor. Officers should be aware of the danger that multiple units responding simultaneously can present. Some facts you should know. A series of U.S. Supreme Court rulings have expanded the power and protections of officers pulling over cars, including a 1997 decision holding that the police must routinely exercise unquestioned command of the situation because of the unpredictable danger, and a 2014 decision allowing the police to shoot at moving cars. You heard that right. What about the taser? Were officers close enough to effectively deploy their taser, or was that just a procedural step leading up to drawing their service weapons and firing? We have to ask, did the APD officers really try to protect life or to de-escalate the situation with confidence using their energy weapons, their tasers? If the officers truly felt their life was in imminent danger from Jaylen Walker, why did at least 2 officers pull and attempt to use their tasers? It's easy to seriously question why would any officer grab and attempt to deploy their taser if they were faced with immediate and lethal force from any suspect. What were the officers' efforts at de-escalation? On October 6, 2021, the Justice Department awarded over $33 million in grants to advance community policing efforts across the country. Approximately $13 million of that support was to go towards the de-escalation training of officers, supporting the creation and delivery of national-level de-escalation training efforts, as well as state and local law enforcement agency efforts to build and maintain their officers' de-escalation proficiency. Again, Light 'Em Up asks, what were the concrete steps and efforts taken in order to de-escalate the situation? With de-escalation techniques, it is important to have a multiple number of options or a range of strategies that are both assertive and deflecting in nature available in your toolbox to use. The ultimate goal is to learn how to control your hostility and aggression, to train yourself to be more focused and selective, as well as limited in your application of force, to not be insensitive to every single solitary injustice, to mitigate the urge of punishing those who do not comply immediately with your verbal commands. We've spoken in the past on Light 'Em Up regarding the comply or die mentality, which plagues law enforcement. The perceived contempt of cop by law enforcement, which has for far too often proved to be a deadly position to take for anyone, more specifically, individuals of color. The fact of the matter is that intelligence and data play a larger role in policing, especially in the investigation sector. We would ask, does the APD have any 21st century policing tactics, such as intelligent policing or shot spotter technology, whereby they employ predictive policing or data in order to drive positive outcomes, reduce direct confrontations with the citizenry that it serves to help them to work smarter and not simply harder? Why hasn't the city council authorized dash cameras for the entire fleet of police cars? If they haven't, why haven't they? Have a bake sale, raise a few dollars. Our tax money should go to things like being able to hear the transmissions of the police, not having those transmissions encrypted because of what you fear bad actors might do with them. Man, take pride in staying one step ahead of the bad guy. As we investigate further, we ask this. Why couldn't officers of the APD have deployed a canine officer? The Akron police have Mando, Bosch, Bruno, and Lobo as canine officers who have been training with their human handler police officers. The dog's skills and instincts have been honed to make them members of finely tuned teams designed to reduce crime and boost community relations, the police say. And while we're on the topic of canine officers, we'd like to pause for a brief moment and thank Leslie Osborne and her canine consulting service for her background information on canine handling. You can find Leslie and her canine consulting service on LinkedIn at hashtag Leslie Osborne Canine Consulting. All one hashtag, all one word. As we investigate, we ask, why couldn't members of the APD, why couldn't they have taken cover from behind their cruisers and direct Mr. Walker from their PA system, as the officers did recently in apprehending Robert E. Crimo III, the Caucasian suspect in the Highland Park, Illinois, 4th of July mass shooting event? We had mentioned earlier in the broadcast of the 137 shots fired that killed Timothy Russell and Melissa Williams in their 22-minute pursuit in late November of 2012 with the Cleveland Division of Policing. We wonder, did the Akron Police Department learn anything from previous incidents such as this? You know, I'd be willing to wager that every officer in the country has watched the 1998 dash cam footage of Deputy Kyle Dinkheller's murder on the Georgia roadside when he pulled over a veteran with a semi-automatic rifle in his pickup. But even with that in the back of their minds, officers must be aware of the times that traffic stops and other encounters with suspects ended going terribly off the rails. Police contacts with Timothy Russell and Melissa Williams, Amadou Diallo, Sandra Bland, Walter Scott, and Philando Castile, just to name a few. We've given this a lot of thought, and we've reflected on this issue. Just who created the danger in this case? Jalen Walker or the police? Many people have remarked that Jalen Walker shouldn't have run from the police, that had he pulled over and cooperated with the officers, this all would have been prevented. We'll never know this for certain. But others have made the case that this was just another example of officer-created jeopardy. In other words, the officers created the conditions for the shooting of Jalen Walker by all the actions they took in the prelude to its tragic ending in the Bridgestone parking lot. You know, as education is always an important component of Light 'Em Up and of our broadcasts, I think it's very important to educate and empower our listeners and the public just what the use of force continuum is and how it applies in everyday policing and how it was specifically applied in this case. The use of force continuum is a fluid, constantly adjusting process. It is a standard that provides law enforcement officers and civilians with guidelines as to how much force may be used against a resisting subject in a given situation. it is imperative to always remember the level of force in a police officer's response is dictated by the situation. Each level is designed to be flexible, as the need for force can change rapidly, and every situation is fluid, complex, and constantly developing and evolving. Police need to work to de-escalate. Simply put, the force continuum is broken down into 6 broad levels. Levels 1 through 3 didn't really play much of a role in the Jalen Walker matter. Level 1 is the officer's presence. The mere presence of a police officer in uniform or in a marked vehicle is often enough to stop a crime in progress or prevent most situations from escalating. That clearly didn't happen here. Level 2 consists of verbal commands. But clearly, nothing the police said to Jalen Walker had much of an impact on him cooperating with them. All you really could hear the police shouting was the F word, the F bomb. Level 3 involves empty hand control. Empty hand control. The police obviously did not lay hands on Jalen Walker because they shot him before they could get close enough to do so. Now, it's important to know there are 2 subcategories called soft empty hand techniques and hard empty hand techniques. Soft empty hand techniques are when bare hands are used to guide, hold, and restrain, applying pressure points and takedown techniques that have a minimal chance of injury. Hard empty hand techniques include kicks, punches, or other striking techniques such as the brachial stun, which is a chop to the neck, or other strikes to key motor sensory points that have a moderate chance of injury. This level of force was available to the officers who sought to arrest Jalen Walker, but their actions, their fear of getting shot at, precluded them from attempting this sort of an arrest. Level 4 involves deployment of pepper spray, a baton, or taser. Of all the options available at this level, the taser is highly effective. The taser discharges a high-voltage spark, 50,000 volts, at a very low amperage. The taser fires 2 small darts connected to wires, which drops a suspect at non-contact distance. These devices are easily carried, lightweight, and affordable. Extensive training is not required, and they may be more effective on persons under the influence of PCP and other drugs who do not respond to chemical irritants, such as OC and pepper spray. They can be especially useful for controlling non-criminal violent behavior, such as persons who are mentally impaired or under the influence. While many consider these weapons to be non-lethal, serious harm and even death have occurred from the police deployment of chemical agents, baton strikes, and tasers. The news service Reuters identified 1,081 deaths across the U.S. that followed a police altercation involving tasers, 39 of which took place in Ohio. We know from the facts presented in this case that at least 2 APD officers tried to employ their tasers. This would indicate that they did not feel, at least initially, that deadly force was called for. The failure of the taser to control Jalen Walker allowed the situation where deadly force could be used. Level 5 is other less lethal measures. These were developed to provide law enforcement, military, and corrections personnel with an alternative to lethal force. They were designed to temporarily incapacitate, confuse, delay, or restrain an adversary in a variety of situations. Less lethal weapons are valuable when A, lethal force is not appropriate, B, lethal force is available as backup, but lesser force may subdue the aggressor, C, lethal force is justified, but its use could cause serious collateral effects, such as injury to bystanders or damage to the environment. There are a great many examples of less lethal weapons used by police departments, including sound weapons, beanbags, fire hoses, etc. None of these were available to any of the officers involved in the confrontation with Jalen Walker. And finally, at level 6, we arrive at deadly force. For all intents and purposes, this is where the members of the Akron Police Department started. Their commands were inarticulate because they were terrified and running while trying to issue them. If a police officer has probable cause to believe that a suspect poses a significant threat of death or serious physical injury to the officer or others, then the use of deadly force is justified. It's painfully obvious from all the news about misuse of power by police that this is easier said than done. By the very nature of the profession, peace officers may at times be confronted with a potentially lethal threat. In most of these instances, peace officers will have no other option but to discharge their firearm in order to protect their life or the lives of others. The use of force is an integral part of a law enforcement officer's job, particularly when arresting criminal suspects. No one disputes that police should be permitted to protect themselves and others from threats to safety. What is often disputed is an officer's assessment of a threat and the level of force selected to counter it. As a general rule, the level of force used should be tailored to the nature of the threat that prompted its use. The courts long ago decided that the standard was objective reasonableness. You need to remember those two words, objective reasonableness. An officer may use the amount of force which is objectively reasonable based on the totality of the circumstances known to the officer at the moment force is used. Deadly force and non-deadly force are held to this exact same standard. Deadly force may be used when the officer believes their life or the life of another is threatened. The objective reasonableness standard requires that an officer shall use only the force reasonable, necessary, and proportionate to effectively bring an incident or person under control. But it is also notable, especially in this case, that officers should take reasonable care that their actions do not precipitate an unnecessary, unreasonable, or disproportionate use of force by placing themselves or others in jeopardy or by not following policy or training. For those who may be quick to ask for justice, which might involve the termination and criminal prosecution of others involved in this shooting, you need to know the facts and the law. From experience, I can tell you, it isn't what you think that matters. It's what you can prove in court that wins the day. All claims that law enforcement officials have used excessive force, deadly or not, in the course of an arrest, investigatory stop, or other seizure of a free citizen are properly analyzed under the Fourth Amendment's objective reasonableness standard. You need to know the Fourth Amendment's reasonableness inquiry is whether the officer's actions are objectively reasonable in the light of the facts and circumstances confronting them without regard to their underlying intent or motivation. The reasonableness of a particular use of force must be judged from the perspective of a reasonable officer on the scene, and its calculus must embody an allowance for the fact that police officers are often forced to make split-second decisions about the amount of force necessary in a particular situation, often in circumstances that are tense, uncertain, and rapidly evolving. The reasonableness of a particular use of force must be judged from the perspective of a reasonable officer on the scene, rather than with 20/20 vision of hindsight. The Supreme Court case that deals with objective reasonableness is Graham v. Connor from 1989, and you can check it out for yourself when time permits. The fact to remember is that the case law dealing with the use of force by law enforcement is so deferential to the police that when an officer learns of his or her true powers, I think many of them are stunned by the power that they truly wield. Again, we want to take you live to the protest in downtown Akron in front of the Harold K. Stubbs Justice Center, which houses the Akron Police Department.
They can't even pull this boy's name up and find anything he ever did in life. School, straight A's, scholar, his sister, they so smart. His sister, her name's Jada Walker. She's standing up so strong for her family. His mom barely can even, she can't even open her eyes. She don't even know how to deal with it. 60 times. In his face, in his leg. Jalen wouldn't hurt nobody. If you knew him, y'all would be so mad yourself. Y'all would be like, oh my God. I'm telling you, if you just knew this kid, there is no way. Now, everybody be mad when their family members get killed or hurt. And you know, we justify, oh, we mad about it. But this is beyond wrong. beyond wrong. They using this black cop over here to talk for them, and all we asking them is for just answers. Y'all not even trying to apologize. Y'all keep saying y'all don't know nothing, but y'all knew to say that he had a gun, which he never did. Never. And if it was a gun, they put it there.
You said you were a mother?
I'm a mother. I'm a mother of five, and I have five grandbabies. And my oldest son and him was very close. Very, very close. My son is so hurt. My sons are scared. I'm scared to let my 12-year-old go outside and play because they don't care about us. They subject to do anything to me just for speaking up because that they a gang member. They don't care. But guess what? I'm a stand up for mine. And I'm never going to stop until they tell the truth about Jalen.
Yep, justice for Jalen.
And that's it. This is my daughter-in-law. And we're not going to stop.
Oh, yeah, we outside.
We here every day.
We outside.
Every day, we wherever they want us to be.
You mentioned something that you have kids yourself and you're scared of them.
I'm scared as ever. My little 12-year-old always want to go outside. I don't want him outside. I'm so scared they might just, he might pull his phone out. They might just shoot him. They don't even kill animals like that when they go hunting. 60 times. Ma'am, no, you gotta know this wrong. I mean, I don't even want you to have to say, well, I know this is wrong, but you know in your heart, you know that they would never do this to one of their kids. Y'all know that we not no harm in nobody. We don't wake up in the morning and try to hurt nobody. Black people don't think like that. They think of us like that. We don't wake up in the morning and just say we hate y'all. We don't do that. Y'all people like us. Why the hell would they kill him like that? And then they stand here and they laugh and they come out here like gang members and make us get out the street. We gotta listen to them, but they don't wanna listen to us. This is not right. This is not right. And I'm telling you, we're not going nowhere every day for Jalen Walker. Every day they gonna tell us, and we do not wanna hear nothing that black man gotta say. He look like an idiot. Cause they didn't say nothing. They made him talk for them. We asked them. We asked them. They guns don't even hold 60 rounds, so what the hell was that all about?
What do you want to see happen?
I want justice for Jalen. I want them to be prosecuted. I want them to go to jail like they would prosecute a murderer. Because that's what they did. They need to go. They need to go. It's not right. And if they keep letting this shit happen, they gonna keep doing it to us. Then when we react, that's when they had a reason to kill us. Every time we do something, they flying. Right, you see 60,000 cops. Who had a hell for one crime? No. They should have been somewhere finding somebody that was doing something wrong instead of messing with Jalen. That's how shit always happens. They so stupid. They don't even realize what they be doing. On this side of town, somebody getting shot down, and you fucking shooting down a kid that don't got nothing to do with nothing. This is horrible. We gonna get justice for Jalen Walker. Period.
You know, the police like to pretend that you are endangering the public by not signaling your turn or having a taillight out. They pretend that that's what it's all about. The police should be genuine. Not disingenuous. We're taught at a young age that we're supposed to be able to trust a police officer. How can you trust a police officer that isn't honest from the start? If that was what it was, that you are endangering the public by not signaling your turn or for having a taillight out, then the police should be genuine and pull you over and issue you a voucher to, say, for example, AutoZone or O'Reilly's Auto Parts, so that you could get the issue addressed and generate business for a local enterprise. A lot of times, I'm sure the driver has no idea that his or her taillight is out. You don't see your car when it's moving forward. How many times, like an airplane pilot, do you do a physical inspection or a complete walk around of your vehicle before getting into it to go somewhere? Probably the answer to that is never. The vehicle stop is the start of a fishing expedition. Why can't we err on the side of valuing life more than we do generating fees for the municipality? Budget better to raise money and work to preserve and value life. When law enforcement had the opportunity to go in and neutralize the shooter in Uvalde, Texas, what happened? Nothing. For 78 minutes. If the APD, the Akron Police Department, would have broken off the chase and 78 minutes later appeared at Jalen Walker's home with his arrest warrant, none of this would have happened. Law enforcement is not beyond improving. Law enforcement must live out the true meaning of its creed, and it owes it to the people in every community to work smarter and truly protect and serve the communities that they are chartered and charged with doing. Perhaps Jalen Walker was scared. Perhaps from past encounters that he saw and heard of with the police, he was so filled with fear he fled from the police on the highway. Perhaps he was filled with fear when he exited his vehicle and chose to run. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. wrote in his memoir, Stride Towards Freedom, "It was for good reason that Negroes of the South had learned to fear and mistrust the white man's justice." Let that one marinate for a hot minute. Well, for the record, as we've sadly seen over the years, in incidents like we mentioned before, involving Timothy Russell and Melissa Williams, Amadou Diallo, Philando Castile, George Floyd and Eric Garner, and far too many more than we could ever recite in a day. It's not just black people in the South who have something to fear from how justice is meted out in the streets of the United States of America. And let the record show that it was reported that one of the officers involved in the shooting was an individual of color. Transparency and accountability have always been issues with the Akron Police and the City of Akron. We'll discuss this further in future episodes. Chased for a traffic violation. Pursued by 8 officers, armed and ready to shoot. Shot at over 7 dozen times. Left with 46 bullet wounds. The case of Jalen Walker will not be wished away by politicians. And the ongoing investigation is likely to not put an end to the many issues in the minds of the people protesting night after night in downtown Akron. Our commitment to you is that we will see this case through all the way to its conclusion. We will set aside as many episodes as it takes in order to properly cover the case as it continues to unfold. The truth is under attack. The truth can't be glossed over. Remember, justice comes to those that fight, not those that cry. I'm Phil Rizzo, and you've got Light 'Em Up.
Hey, I want to thank my friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting. Their fresh-squeezed hydrating green tea, loaded with amino acids and antioxidants, help replenish and neutralize skin for that natural glow. Want to know the best part? Their tea is organically grown and chosen for skincare from 3,301 Korean native green tea varieties. The winning 1-2-3 punch combination consists of the youth enhancing serum with black tea. Then you just dap a little bit of the eye serum underneath your eyes, and finally the enhancing cream. Oh my goodness. Like Muhammad Ali used to say, I'm pretty. I'm still pretty. They offer innovative beauty solutions for men, also powered by the finest natural ingredients responsibly sourced from Korea's pristine Jeju Island. Their proprietary extraction methods preserve the purity and potency of these wholesome ingredients from plant to bottle to your skin, offering advanced formulas that safely address all skin concerns without the use of harmful chemicals and preservatives. With the wonders of nature at the heart of Innisfree, they take care to preserve and protect the environment in all that they do. We want to thank our friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting of Light 'Em Up.
Hey, don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube and Instagram at Rizzo's Protective Group. We're very excited about being ranked 10th out of the top 35 criminal justice podcasts as ranked and listed by FeedSpot. Hey, don't forget to subscribe to FeedSpot at www.feedspot.com. And please, por favor, per favore, visit our friends at https://newsly.me. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web becomes listenable. You can browse articles from topics you choose and start playing. Hey, stop scrolling, start listening. You can follow any topic, as specific as you like, from sports, science, to Bitcoin. It'll find you the latest articles and read them to you. Hey, it's as easy as that. And to top it off, they have podcasts as well. Explore trending podcasts from over 50 countries. Our podcast, Light 'Em Up, is there too. I started using it as my default podcast app, and you can too. Download and use Newsly for free now from www.newsly.me or from the link in the podcast description liner notes and use the promo code Light 'Em Up. And Light 'Em Up in this case is spelled LGHTEMUP. All one word. That's L1GHTEMUP. All one word.